New ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Daniel McCarthy, the founder and CEO of MusicBed and Film Supply. With a diverse background in filmmaking, marketing, design, and music, he's built MusicBed into the leading platform for licensing relevant music to filmmakers, brands, ad agencies, and TV studios. He's also revolutionizing the stock footage industry through Film Supply, which represents premium 4K content from some of the world's top filmmakers. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with a little bit of background on your career, because you certainly had a lot of incredible experience. At one point, you were a filmmaker and a creative director at an ad agency. Can you give me and the audience the sort of Cliff Notes version of your background and why you founded MusicBed and then Film Supply?
Okay, Cliff Notes. So I started, I actually went to school for music business and dropped out, and college is what I'm talking about. I did finish high school. I'm a proud graduate of Southwest High School. So I went to college for music business, thought I wanted to, be a producer, create it somehow. And then I got into graphic design my freshman year in college, really fell in love with graphic design. And had no idea why I got into school for music business. Didn't really think I'd ever do anything with it. So I got out. I started working at an advertising agency. Grew to be a creative director there. Left. Started our own agency. And that's kind of where a lot of this started. So we were doing some filmmaking. We were doing a lot of branding for clients. Some strategic campaign, like digital campaign stuff. And this was probably like 9 years ago when this is where like the content conversation I feel like started like 10 years ago. Everyone, you know, all these companies are trying to figure out how to create. I mean, the advertising industry is really kind of changing and being turned on its head, and it's more about stories and creating content and adding value to your customers through all these alternative mediums. And it was like the wild, wild west. And I thought really that we were getting into creating a creative agency at the time to be doing branding and digital media. And then all of a sudden we were getting pulled into these film projects. And it was like, okay, well, yeah, I think we could do that. And so we kind of found ourselves being split almost 50-50 between like interactive media and film. And then when it came to the film projects, it was kind of this weird spot we were living in. We weren't low budget, but we weren't big enough budget to go get the latest, greatest song from the biggest publishers and labels. We just didn't have that kind of money. So we were in this kind of middle zone where we might have $10,000 or $15,000 for a song, or sometimes less. And we just kind of kept beating our heads against the wall, feeling like we couldn't. Just like there's so much good music out there. Why is it so hard to get? I mean, why is it so complicated? In the music licensing space, in a nutshell, to sync a song to a film or a commercial, everybody that's involved in the song has to approve it. And so there could be multiple writers and labels and publishers, and I just felt very daunting. And then on the flip side of that, there's like production music libraries and the music quality is not great. So really, I went from being a creative director to an agency owner to thinking there's a bigger problem here and I feel like we can fix it, which was like, how do we get the voice of these thousands and thousands and thousands of great independent artists and curate it in a way and make it available to advertising agencies and indie filmmakers and do it in a way that makes sense to them and is clear. And so that was back in 2012, really was where we came up with the idea of MusicBed. And it was wild, honestly, because I spent 3 months in music business classes, and I wasn't even really in, you know, I'm in like my freshman year in college taking rudimental stuff. So it's like, I didn't know anything about the industry. I knew way more about the advertising and creative like marketing space than I did about music. And we just kind of got a crash course in music licensing from our intellectual property attorneys and talking to band managers. And I sold a house, pulled $25,000 of equity out of it. That I used that to hire our first web development company to create the kind of the first go at it. And then we funded the rest of it through the agency for about the first year. And then ended up selling the advertising agency and going full on MusicBed. So that was 2012. So that felt a little cliff notesy to me, but it was probably still a little long. That's kind of like in a nutshell, that's how it all.
Well, it sounds like you saw as an agency dealing with this in between client size, you saw a need that wasn't being met and decided that you had an idea for how to meet it. It is interesting that you sort of incubated it in your agency until it could stand on its own two legs. And that was about 6 years ago then, if it was 2012. And Film Supply, did you incubate Film Supply out of MusicBed or did you launch that totally separately?
We did. And it cost a lot more and took a lot longer to do than we thought. But I think as they all, which is funny because in advertising, I used to always make, because I feel like every advertising agency at some point, big or small, they, you know, advertising agencies spend their whole lives and careers making other people's businesses amazing, right? Like it's,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's like they're getting paid hourly to basically be the magic behind a product. It used to always blow my mind. I'm like, I'm the reason you're successful as a company and I'm getting paid, you know, $250 an hour to do it. And this is like crazy. So it's like every advertising agency wakes up one day and says like, we have a great idea. Let's incubate it ourselves. Let's go make it big. And I used to always make fun of that because I always thought it was so funny that every advertising agency would end up having a product at some point that would bomb. And like they thought they could, it was just, I don't know. It just seemed like at least where we were at in Dallas, like I just felt like every agency had that one product, like the beer koozie or the thing or the what. It was like everyone had something, like the beard oil, whatever it was. And
oh my God.
It was like always something. And so then we're over here. I've made fun of people for doing this my whole life. And I'm telling, you know, my co-founder at the time, like, let's do it. And he's like, dude, this is we're the people you make fun of. And so, but yeah, it just felt right. And I felt like we could do it. And we went from 35 artists to 800. So yeah, so we incubated it with really the agency money. And then three or four years later, we wanted to do the same thing, but on the footage side, represent a bunch of filmmakers for stock footage licensing. And we definitely funded that through MusicBed. You know, it's the second one is harder. And the problem is you don't know what you don't know. And then you do know what you do know. So when we started MusicBed, we were really able to do it very cheap because we had no idea what we were doing and we were doing it as cheap as we could. And we didn't have a client base and we had the industry had no expectation. We were just, you know, we were just like guerrilla style making it happen. And then 4 years later, you know, you have 30,000 clients and you have this, all this expectation. And so then you launch this idea that we're launching Film Supply and it's kind of becomes another animal. So it's like, I always tell people what it cost me $100,000 to do with MusicBed. It cost us $1 million to do with Film Supply. It was like, it just,
because you couldn't launch it scrappy. You had to launch it
exactly
at the level that MusicBed had achieved. So you had to come out
exactly
with a product
like,
that was equal.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't go back. You just, and that's,
you can't be a startup all over again.
Well, I think some of it is what the industry puts on you. Like some of it is the industry expectations and some of it's what you put on yourself. Like I can't think that way anymore. Like I think differently now. Like I can't think broken and cheap and small. And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a mind boggle trying to go from like we have a bunch of momentum and we're growing and then trying to put yourself back into these like bootstrap. It's a wild thing. It's a different deal.
You've outgrown it. You don't want to live like that anymore. I do have a question in terms of the business model, because you developed a really unique and interesting business model for MusicBed. And is it the same business model for Film Supply? Is that sort of where you're replicating that? I mean, one of the things that's really interesting is that, at least for the music, I understand that it's 70-30, that the artists actually come out quite well in your system there. Is that the same for film? Is it the same situation?
Film Supply is actually 50-50 for the most part. And MusicBed isn't always straight up We always say, because it's a different kind of per deal, but we always just say that the artist gets the majority of the revenue, which is true across the board, which is very different than a lot in the industry are 70-30 the other direction. I mean, we've got some competitors that, you know, that keep 70 and pay 30 out. For me, I'm like, we were artists, right? To me, you can't lead with the idea that you're generating revenue for artists, that you're giving all these musicians and filmmakers revenue streams to do what they love as a living. You can't really lead with that point if you're keeping the majority of the money. I think at that point, you're just using them to create a brand. So, you know, for us, it's a really big deal. It's a really big deal that on the music bed side, you know, especially because the film is a little bit interesting because a lot of these guys are running production companies and I guess in this day and age, it's easier to make money in commerce as a filmmaker than it is as a musician, if that makes sense. So like they have gigs. I mean, they have paying clients a lot of times versus the musician, you know, at some point in their life, somebody that loved them told them they should probably give up on their dream. I mean, this isn't going to work. I don't know what you're thinking. And they're pursuing it. And really the only way they're making money is by touring, playing shows, Spotify streams if they can get some. So really for a lot of our musicians, we become their primary source of income and the ability for them to actually do this as a career.
Right. And it is a different model. You're absolutely right. With the filmmakers, are you commissioning types of things that you want them to shoot, or are they coming to you with film that they've shot? What's the curation process like?
It's both. So we do commission work when it's needed, you know, when an agency needs something we don't have. But a lot of times we're starting with their passion projects and really, really pushing them to shoot what they love, shoot what makes, you know, we believe in both. That's something that's, I think, really standard on both brands. We really believe that what sells is not what you created in kind of some sort of contrived, I'm trying to make something that sells kind of way. We believe that what sells is what came from your heart as an artist, what you were passionate about. And so, you know, whether it's a musician, we tell our musicians all the time, like, don't conform your sound to what you believe will sell. Like, create music that speaks to you. And I promise you, if it speaks to you, it will speak to someone else. And so from a filmmaking perspective, I mean, we really, you know, because at the end of the day, what is film supply? It's a stock footage company. That's what you could deem it. That's what the industry knows it as. We believe that we're a footage licensing platform and we represent some of the best filmmakers in the world. And it's just way different content. It's not this contrived footage of a businessman, you know, shaking a businesswoman's hand. It's like this very emotional content that draws you into the deeper level and helps communicate a story. And so I don't even know what the question was. I totally lost track of my thoughts there. But I think they're very similar, but then they kind of become completely different in a lot of ways. So it's been an interesting journey with both brands.
So, well, if the question had been around curation and how that worked. And so whether you were assigning, I mean, to your point about, you know, businessman shaking businesswoman's hand, as trite and horrible as those things are, sometimes, you know, corporations have reels and they need a little bit of see and say, but they want it to feel more authentic or it needs to be more modern. And so I guess my question to you is, are you thinking of sort of genre type things like we need more new devices being shot, or do you leave that to the other footage companies? And if people come to you, they're really coming to something for something different. And if that's what it is, like if I'm a potential client of yours, where should you sit in my mind? Like, what am I thinking when I think of you? Like, what is it?
That's a great question. I think the new devices and the rant, like that stuff is a bit of a byproduct because all of our film. So where I think we sit in a lot of producers' minds and a lot of editors' minds is we represent a lot of the directors, like the top directors at agencies are commissioning to do their commercials already. So a lot of times we're kind of filling footage that comes from the same style, the same perspective, the same mind that they're hiring already to do their project.
Right.
So we're kind of this side by side. Like you may be hiring director A or director B to go do the commercial, but inevitably once you sit down in the edit bay, there's like a couple of holes and there's some things that need to be filled. And you know, from our perspective, like why not fill it with that director's footage or someone like-minded and kind of the same kind of content? Because I think the advantage that we have is we get the footage that is the most relevant, that is being used right now in commercials and in TV shows, because we're representing the directors that are shooting those actual things. You know, like we'll have the filmmaker that's on location for Adidas, you know, on $1 million commissioned commercial, but that filmmaker, you know, rents the gear for an additional 2 days and keeps talent and shoots a bunch of stuff for themselves for some passion stuff. And so it's like you're getting the kind of footage and sets and lighting and, you know, the emotion that you'd be getting out of some of these directors for some of these $1 million shoots. You're able to actually license the footage. So that's what, I mean, that's kind of our perspective on it, is like, you know, it's the same guy shooting the new Samsung Galaxy stuff. So you're going to get, you know, you're going to get new devices because they're the most relevant directors on the market right now.
So if I'm an agency or a brand and I come to you, do I ask you for a director or do I ask you for a type of footage, or does it come either way?
Yeah, great question. Both. So primarily we're looking for footage.
Okay.
So usually, I mean, we're like, what we don't offer is the concept. I mean, that's the agency's role. You know, then the director is presenting a mood board. And so many times we're just coming in to support what's already in motion. And then every so often we'll commission a director because it's like there's a specific director or specific stuff they're looking for. It's so random. I mean, we've done projects that are like all over the globe. And so, you know, agency needs, like, we need 15 great filmmakers, but we need them in 15 different locations. And can you help us source that? Well, yeah, we can, because we represent 300-400 filmmakers across the globe. So
you actually source directors for jobs, full-on jobs. You're not just licensing.
We do, but it's a side. It's not like our main focus is not director representation. We represent them solely for licensing. We just, as a byproduct, because we're having so many conversations and we're involved really, really early on in projects, sometimes we get to speak into what directors get used on projects. It's just kind of a byproduct of the brand, but yeah.
So when a filmmaker, and we veered into film and I really want to talk about music, but I just have one more question about the film. When they come to you, the rights and the clearances and everybody who appears and the locations and all the images, have they sewn all that up and they give it to you, you know, free and clear, or do you have to chase that stuff down? I mean, obviously by the time it gets to your clients, it's clean, but who deals with the rights when it gets to you?
Yeah, so we do, and sometimes we have to track it down. I mean, it's a bit of an education process with our filmmakers of like teaching them. You know, a lot of our filmmakers are yes, right? I mean, because a lot of them are like going rogue, like the director and the DP going out into the wilderness and shooting amazing footage, and we're like, could you bring a producer next time so you get all the releases, right? It's like, could you bring somebody that's like slightly responsible so that you could, you know, I mean, it's because for a film, like an indie filmmaker, it's like the last thing they care about. But if their footage is going to be of any value at any point in time, anywhere in the future, then they need to make sure they get clearance on everything. So it's a big education process for us. And then we work through it with them to get it right. But yeah, I mean, everything that's in the catalog is clear, because that's a big part of this, of the selling point of using us is, you know, as an agency, you can't afford to put your name on the line and then have something come back on you. And so we make sure we have it all, you know, all the I's dotted and T's crossed. But that's probably the biggest pain point, you know, is making sure we have all of the legalities of everything done.
Right, right. Now let's pivot back to music, because that really, I was just curious. I've been dealing with some footage issues, so I'm curious about that. So with the music, so your music isn't like stock tracks, or is it? Are you representing bands, up and coming bands, and it's their music, their songs, or are you also doing, are people sort of writing spec, like this will sound good for a trailer, or this will sound good for, you know, that they're writing lengths that are 60 seconds. Obviously, it's not a song length or something, you know.
How does
that work?
That's a great question. So no, we're not stock, and we do represent a bunch of bands. And that's really where Nick, our co-founder, comes in. I mean, he's kind of the magic behind the style and the curation of the catalog. We strictly, we very intentionally stay away from 30 second, 60 second, 15 second, because what it ends up doing to an artist is it kind of confines them down into this box. And it instantly makes them more cheesy. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just when an artist sits down to write a song, they're writing a song. And that song may be 2.5 minutes or 3.5 minutes or 4 minutes. I would way rather take their 3.5 minute song after it's built out in its authenticity and figure out how to create a 60 second piece out of it.
Right.
Then say like, hey, could you sit down and like write this 60 second little thing for, you know, because it just, it's funny. You do that to one of the best songwriters in the world and they just become like a cheese ball. Like it's like instant.
Right.
And it's like, no. Go do what you do. And so, you know, we talk a lot about discovery as a brand. It's a really big deal to us. We want to make sure that, you know, the agencies that work with us can trust us to discover new sounds, up and coming bands. You know, we try to not, we have relationships with Capitol and Universal and all, but we don't really want to represent the band that's already made it and you've heard it and you know, it's not anything new. We try to stay in kind of the undiscovered realm. I think they've done a really good job of that in hip hop. I think they've done a really good job in that with some of the new pop stuff they've released, where it's, you're listening to it and it's, and you're thinking, why is this not already on the radio? Why is this not already popular? And so I think one of the roles we want to play for our clients is we want to give our clients the opportunity to place a song, and it's the first time that song or that band is heard in a commercial or a film. Because I just think as a music lover and as a filmmaker and as a former creative director, like there's all these emotions that come into to placing like that perfect song in a commercial, what it can do, the kind of emotion that it adds, you know. And you just have this moment where, you know, there's all these times in history. I always talk about there was a Chevy Cruze commercial and they placed a Fun song, like a song by Fun, that it was like, I don't even know the whole story. I think it was Fun's like last record. They had talked about disbanding as a band. They really weren't making any headway. Chevy uses this song and it exploded. Huh. And it exploded for the band. It made the commercial really memorable. It was Rob Dyrdek doing a kickflip with a Chevy Cruze. I think it was a Cruze, Chevy something. Anyway, it's just kind of crazy commercial, but it was all of these things kind of come together, this really amazing song, this great kind of commercial concept, and it blows up, and it was good for everybody because consumers now fall in love with the band, you know, and then every time they hear that song on the radio now, they're thinking of that commercial, which is where they saw it the first time, so it's good for Chevy. And that's kind of the place we want to live in, is a, you know, being a really great discovery tool for these new up and coming artists.
So let's say you have that up and coming artist and they hit it big with a song and then they blow up. Do they stay with you or do they move on? I mean, does your business grow so that you start having both those blown up artists as well as the new up and comers, or are you a feeder? Do you have a feeder relationship to these other labels?
No, that's a good question. We used to really be only a feeder, especially when we were young. It was like, you know, we signed Imagine Dragons like way back before anybody knew who they were. 6 months after we signed them, I think Universal is who ended up signing them, and then we lost them because we're just like little old music licensing company in Texas. Nobody knows who we are. And so that used to be the relationship. You know, we would kind of have them, they do well, and then, you know, eventually they get discovered and then we lose them. But now the relationship is really a lot better now, because I think one, we've made a lot of momentum in the industry and we've kind of proven ourselves and grown up a little bit. And so we've been representing Juno and the Lion for a long time. Ben Rector is a great example. I mean, we're licensing Ben Rector's first couple of albums 6-7 years ago. Now he's getting radio play, and I hear them every time I walk into Starbucks. You know, we've actually, it's funny that you use that word. Like we've tried to intentionally remove feeder system from our blood, you know, cause it was not on purpose. You know, obviously we want to sign artists. We want to see them blow up and we want to succeed with them. We don't want to lose them the day that they get, you know, that they get a deal, which is kind of just what happened the first couple of years while we were getting our feet under ourselves. But now it's much more of a solid relationship where we get to continue to work with them as they move on to major, you know, major things. And I mean, my thing is like I don't just want to sync your music when you're playing to 100 people. Like I would also like to sync your music when you're selling out American Airlines Center or whatever. I mean, it's so, right. So yeah, that's been a bit of a journey for us as we've grown.
We're nearing the end of our chat, but I'm wondering, what does the future hold for you? What's next for you? What are your future goals and how are you going to push the envelope in both of these ventures?
Well, so you caught me at a good time. I think without going into any crazy details, I think the filmmaking industry is in a really weird spot. Maybe it always is. I don't know. I mean, the music industry moves quickly. Film industry has moved very quickly, especially with just recent technology advancements. It's crazy what you can produce on limited timeframes and budgets. And I think when we got into the industry 10 years ago, I mean, YouTube Content ID wasn't even a thing. Like all these things were not music licensing wasn't really even it wasn't a word talked about if you weren't doing major productions. I mean, nobody knew what it was. And now, like, fast forward to where we are now, and you've got 9 million YouTube creators. You've got 3.7 million people editing videos on their phone on a GoPro editing app. It's just crazy, right? I mean, it's not. Today's film school is a 15-year-old kid with a camera and a YouTube channel. And it's just a different world for us. So we're looking at it and saying, you know, my goal for MusicBed is to be the name brand of music licensing. I think that doesn't exist. There's no Coca-Cola. There's no Google. There's no Kleenex. There's no, like, when you think search online, you think Google. When you think shop online, you think Amazon. When you think music licensing, you think pain in the butt. Like, I don't know. There's no brand, right? There's no company that has really emerged and said video is the communication platform of the future. Outside of the physical spoken word, film is the best way to communicate a message or a story in the world. It's just the best. And it is just where we live now. And 50% of that film is the track, the music behind that film, you know, the audio behind it, not necessarily just the music, but the audio. And so I think for us, you know, the future for us is how do we make sure we continue to represent the best musicians on the planet and then position ourselves to be that company that people can rely on and trust to make sure we're bringing them great music, we're bringing them great options, we're presenting it to them in the way that they want it to be presented to them. So yeah, I mean, I do, you know, there's a lot of things happening for us in the next year. Like we just announced a membership platform that we've never done, which is basically a subscription. So up until now, we've been single, you know, you pay per use. And so many of even our larger clients have said like that works for us for a lot of things. You know, a lot of our big agencies, obviously they'll continue to license a song per project. But for a lot of our really big clients, they need a membership. They need to be able to pay one fee and kind of have access to everything. And so that's been something that 6 years ago, I would have told you never, there's no way, we'll never do it. And I feel like, you know, you have to really make sure you always have your eyes up and you're looking at the industry and saying, where is the industry taking us? And we're either going to be disrupted by it or we are going to be the disruptor. I mean, that's the kind of conversation we're having all the time, which is like, what are we, you know, who are we going to be and where are we going to go? And how do we make sure that as there are more, I think, and even Spotify has kind of proved this. Everyone hated Spotify and you're killing the music industry and whatever. And they've been able to prove that they're pumping more money into the music industry than any other platform ever. It's just different. And my perspective is there's not going to be less money in sync licensing. There's not going to be less money in content being produced, but it's going to be different. There's going to be more content, more platforms. We're going to be seeing brands come out with episodic content. There's all kinds of different things happening right now that's just like never before. And we just want to make sure that we're positioned well to participate in all of it on the music side.
Right. So where can listeners find you? Where can they learn more about your companies?
So musicbed.com and then filmsupply.com. is where they can find out about the companies. Me personally, unfortunately, I'm a weird, I don't have any social media. One day I'll write a book about it.
No, no social media. How can you exist?
Isn't that crazy? I know. I feel like I feel
that's your personal like disruption. My dad.
The problem is like my, I don't know how, what y'all's personality types is. Like I'm very driven, competitive. Like it for the first few years of the company, it just ate me alive.
Right.
Like I wanted to win. I just would get my eyes focused on what competitors are doing and where we're headed in the industry. And I just realized like, this is like eating away. It's eroding my soul. And so I had to get off of it for a while to just like clear my head and make sure we were doing what we needed to. Obviously we use social media as brands,
right,
but me
right.
personally, I got off of it and it was so freeing. I never got back on. So
that's interesting.
I'm sorry. I can't help you by tweeting. The brand can tweet the podcast, which is way more powerful than me. That's way more powerful than me doing it by myself anyway. So it's fine.
Well, if you have no presence, then yes, indeedy. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. It's been a lot of fun. We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest,
Daniel McCarthy.
And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.